Okay, so today we will look at Jewish history. So let's review what we learned about Jewish history so far. Now remember that for most of human history, the Middle East has been the wealthiest part of the world. And as we discussed before, the Levant, especially Jerusalem, is the center of the world because it connects all the major civilizations, okay? You have Egypt, Anatolia, Mesopotamia, and over here you have the Persians. And over here is the Mediterranean, okay? As you can see, basically all roads lead to Jerusalem. So whoever controls Jerusalem controls the major trade access point, which is the most profitable part of an empire. And so for these empires, it's always been a problem of how to keep Jerusalem under control because Jerusalem, whoever controls Jerusalem, can always choose to switch sides, right? So if Mesopotamia controls Jerusalem, what the Egyptians will do is bribe Jerusalem to switch sides. And this keeps on going over and over. And they tried many different techniques on how to control Jerusalem. The Babylonians tried to take captives, hostages, and that didn't really work as well. So the Babylonians decided to destroy Jerusalem, okay? And with it, the Israeli identity became splintered and scattered. And this is the Babylonian Empire. But eventually what happened is that the Babylonians would be conquered by the Persians. And the Persians will adopt a new technique to control Jerusalem, which is divide and rule. They will create the Jewish identity implanted in Jerusalem, and that will create conflict with the locals. And the Jews will not be forever loyal to Persia because they are a foreign entity within the Levant. And only by swearing loyalty to Persia can they maintain control over the Levant. And in return, the Persians will give the Jews financing to build their second temple. So at this point in history, a Jewish identity emerges, and there are three pillars to the identity that continues even today, okay? So the first pillar is they become a monotheistic religion, which believes that Yahweh is the only God, and they're the chosen people of Yahweh, because Yahweh had a covenant with Abraham. Yahweh promised Abraham that your people will control the promised land, okay? And the promised land extends from the Nile in Egypt to the Euphrates in Mesopotamia. Okay, that is the promised land. That's the first pillar. The second pillar is the Jews must follow the law of Moses, because the law of Moses is the law of God, the Ten Commandments, right? And the law of Moses, over time, will be divided into the Torah, which is the written law, and the Talmud, which is the oral law. Okay, the Torah is basically the five books of the Bible, the first five books of the Bible. And the third pillar is to use the Bible as the collective memory of the people. Okay, so the Jews believe the Bible, what happened in the Bible, is literal. It is actually what happened. And by believing that the Bible is literal and true, then you become a Jew. Okay, and that's why the Jewish identity is very flexible. Okay, so at this point in history, when the Jews swear loyalty to Persia, there are some characteristics that will change over time. The first major characteristic is that the center of worship is in Jerusalem, and the second temple. Okay, so if you're a Jewish person, you must make animal sacrifices to Yahweh, and therefore the Sadducees, these are hereditary priests, they are the ones who control the religion. Then there's very strict laws that govern how people behave. So for example, you must rest on Sabbath. You also cannot marry outside your religion. You must be circumcised, okay? So there are all these restrictions on how people behave. Over time, what happened is that the Jews will expand across the world. A lot of Jews will work as mercenaries in Alexander the Great's army as he conquers Persia. And as the Hellenistic world comes into being, Jews will move around for economic opportunities, right? They'll work as officials, they'll work as artisans, they'll work as tradespeople, as merchants. And so they're scattered around the Hellenistic world. And as we discussed, at this point in history, the three major cultures that we've looked at, the Jewish culture, the Greek culture, and the Persian culture, will merge together in a process we call synchronization. And that gives birth basically to Western civilization. Unfortunately, what happens is that over time, because the Jerusalem is so important, and because the Jews believe they are a special people who only worship the one true God, that will cause conflict with the Greeks. Okay? The Greeks also are very chauvinistic, very proud people who believe their culture is superior. And quite honestly, a lot of Jews will convert to the Hellenistic lifestyle. Okay? But this causes conflict. And ultimately, this will culminate in something called the Maccabean Revolt, where a certain group of Jews decide to rebel against the Greeks. And even though they're a minority, even though most Jews actually do not support them, because of their religious conviction, because of the will of God, they will triumph and they will establish the Maccabean Kingdom. And this victory is celebrated today in something called the Hanukkah Festival, okay? Hanukkah. And that's a celebration of the Maccabees' revolt against the Greeks. And the reason why is the Greeks wanted the Jews to celebrate their religion as well. They wanted to turn the Second Temple into a site to worship Greek gods. And so the fanatical Jews rebelled against that. Okay. All right. But this kingdom of the Maccabees will not last very long. Again, the problem is that Jerusalem, it is the nexus of empires. And so what will happen is the Romans will come and take control over this area. And the Romans are actually worse than the Greeks. The Romans are even more chauvinistic, more discriminatory towards the Jews. And this will launch three major wars between the Romans and the Jews. The entire Jewish diaspora will revolt against the Romans, and this will lead to many, many Jews being massacred because the Romans are vicious people. In 70, the year 70, they burned down the Second Temple to destroy the morale of the Jews. And because they destroyed the Second Temple, this causes a shift in the Jewish religion. Because remember, at this point in history, the Second Temple is a site of Jewish worship. This is the house of God. This is where Yahweh lives, okay? So when the Second Temple is destroyed, what happened is that the Jews, or many Jews, will choose to convert to Christianity, okay? Because remember, we discussed how Paul created Christianity as a mechanism for Jews to still be Jews, but at the same time be Roman as well, okay? That's the idea of the Christian religion. But those who stay become much more fanatical. In fact, they develop a very messianic, eschatological attitude, meaning the end of the world is coming, God is coming to destroy the Romans, and we must show our loyalty to God. And so they keep on the fight, even though they've lost the war against the Romans, they will go into the Arabian desert, where they will incubate a new religion called Islam, and they will prophesy the coming of the Messiah, who will turn out to be Muhammad, right? So at this point in history, the Jews must leave Jerusalem because the Romans basically kicked them out, and their religion was splintered into many different factions. But the major characteristic is that they've gone from temple worship to worship of their law, okay, the law of Moses. And so the rabbis come into power. Before, it was the Sadducees, the priests who control the temple, who are in charge. Now it's the rabbis. The rabbis are basically the Pharisees, those who teach the oral law of Moses. Okay, so they become the new elite in the Jewish diaspora. And so as we discussed, a lot of Jews at this time convert to Christians. All the early Christians were Jews, okay? And as we discussed, what will happen is those Jews who are most fanatical, they will escape into the Arabian desert and they will incubate Islam. And eventually, Islam will conquer the world. And at this point, they feel as though they've achieved the Messianic age. And they have returned to Jerusalem. Now, the Jews believe that in the Messianic age, the Messiah will come, lead them to victory, bring all the Jews back to Jerusalem, and build the third temple, and usher in the Messianic age. Okay? And that's what they believe happened. And so, this is the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, and this is meant to be the third temple. Over time, what will happen is they will change it to become a center of Islamic worship. But in the beginning, it was really the third temple. And so at this point, a lot of Jews convert to Islam as well, because they think that Muhammad is their Messiah. Okay? So a lot of Jews are converted to Christianity and Islam, but there are a lot of Jews who do not, and they settle throughout the world. Okay? Let's look at Europe at this point. So what's happening in Europe is that Europe is becoming more and more Christian, but the Jews are allowed to stay. And what will happen over time is that they will be persecuted, massacred, and expelled from many different places in Europe. I'm not sure if you can see this map clearly, but the circles, okay, are places where there was at least one Jewish expulsion. So this is a terrible time for the Jews, because they settle in a place, they're trying to practice religion, and then after they've settled in, they're expelled by the people. So what has happened? Okay, well, what's happening is that the Jews come to an arrangement with the European nobility. Okay, and there's a deal, there's a contract. That's not written down, but it's understood. Basically, what the Jews agree to is they become slaves to nobility. Okay, because in the Christian religion, you're not allowed to charge interest. You're not allowed to make bank loans to peasants and charge interest. But that's the most profitable business you can get into, right? So you, as nobles, can't do it. What do? Well, you get the Jews to do it for you. But not only that, but you get the Jews to also manage your property. Jews are actually very good at industry and trade. There's a Jewish diaspora, right? So the Jews make very good merchants because they're able to access different networks around the world. That's very important if you're the elite. Also, the Jews can make loans to you for wars and stuff. Okay? And Jews are very good at finance. They're very good at medicine. Okay, so the Jews become very independent. They become a very important part of the European economy. Okay, and the last reason, which is the most problematic, is that the Jews are kept around as a scapegoat. Okay, so you know, in our society, we have poor people. Why? To put fear into people, right? If you don't work hard in school, if you don't make a lot of money, you end up like poor and homeless, right? Well, in Catholic Europe, remember the Catholic Church is in charge at this point. The Catholic Church wanted to keep Jews around to scare the Christians and say, hey, if you don't believe in Jesus, you end up like the Jews. Okay? And so what happens is that this arrangement is fine when the economy is good. But what happens when the economy is bad? What happens when people are angry? The Jews get blamed, right? Because the Jews are the ones who are loan sharks. The Jews are the ones who killed Jesus. The Jews are the ones who are causing all the spiritual pollution, right? And so this is the implicit contract made between the Jews and the European nobility. You're allowed to stay and make a lot of money, but when we need a scapegoat, you get blamed and you have to leave, okay? Or possibly get massacred as well. So it's a terrible, terrible deal for the Jews, but they keep it because they want to practice their religion, okay? Alright, so there's one place in Europe that is very friendly towards the Jews. And this is actually the wealthiest part of Europe. It's Spain, okay? At this point, it's controlled by the Muslims. And remember, the difference between the Muslims and the Catholics is the Catholics persecute the Jews because they think that the Jews killed Jesus. But the Muslims don't believe that. The Muslims believe that the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims are all one big family, okay? They are all descendants of Abraham. So the Jews and the Christians are treated very well in Spain, and Jews rise up very high within the Al-Andalus system, okay? Because they're very literate, they know the Bible very well. The Bible is a holy book. They have connections to the Jewish diaspora around the world, and they are extremely good at finance, okay? So the Jews prosper in this region. The problem is that over time, this region will be reconquered by the Christians. And now the Christians will continue to persecute the Jews and force Jews to convert, okay? So this is when the Jews, Christians, and Islams get along very well in Spain, okay? But in 1492, the Spanish will expel the Jews from Spain. You either convert or you leave, okay? And a lot convert and a lot go off to the Ottoman Empire, okay? And this was a traumatic event in Jewish history because they were extremely well established in Spain. They felt they were Spanish, and now suddenly they lost everything, okay? Now, a lot did convert. And this caused a schism, a schism within the Jewish religion. Those who converted and those who refused to convert now became bitter enemies, okay? Okay, so what will happen now is a lot of Jews choose to settle in the Polish Lithuanian Commonwealth, which is a new nation, and because it's a new nation, they need a lot of people. So, what they will do is they will have extremely tolerant policies towards the Jews. You're allowed to practice your own religion. So a lot of Jews from around the world settle in the Polish Lutheran Commonwealth. And again, they thrive. They do extremely well. But the problem is that this area can be easily invaded. And because it becomes more wealthy, more people start to invade it from Sweden, from Russia. And so war breaks out. And a lot of Jews get killed. So it just gets worse and worse for the Jews. When they think they finally found a home, they have to suffer this persecution. So all this history creates a major crisis of faith among Jewish people, okay? And the three big questions is, the first law in the Jewish religion is do not worship false idols. That's the first law of the Ten Commandments. So why is it that Jews can convert to Christianity and Islam and not suffer any consequences? Okay, and why are so many Jews converting? If Yahweh is a true God, and Yahweh demands complete obedience to Him, why is it okay to convert? Okay, that's a problem. Second problem is, what did Jews do wrong exactly to be persecuted and massacred like this? Yeah, okay, some Jews convert to Christianity and Islam, but go punish them, man. Why are the Jews who are loyal to Yahweh punished? That makes no sense. Okay, and the third big question is, if Yahweh promised the Jews a homeland called a promised land, why don't they have it? Why are they kicked out? For hundreds of years, despite all the persecution, despite all the trauma, they've stayed loyal to Yahweh. So why is this happening? This creates a crisis of faith, okay? And so whenever there's a crisis of faith, Jews believe it is the end times. The world is coming to an end, and the Messiah is coming. Okay, so at this point in history, about the year 1600, there's this heavy anticipation of the coming of the Messiah. And so what will happen is that one man named Zabbatai Zevi, who was born in the Ottoman Empire, he will declare himself the Messiah. Okay? And Zabbatai Zevi is the equivalent of Jesus in the Jewish religion. Now, we don't actually know much about him. And the reason why is that what we know about him, a lot of information was written by his enemies, the rabbis. His followers are pretty secretive, okay? But one thing happened is this. Whenever you have a Messiah come, what the Messiah does is he's essentially a revolutionary. He's trying to overthrow the social order. Okay? And his major concern is, why are Jews being persecuted like this? And his answer is, because we're not practicing the true faith. What we have are all these laws created by the rabbis. But who are the rabbis? The rabbis are just a corrupt elite, like every priest class before. They're like the Catholic Church, right? The Catholic Church is a hierarchy, and so over time become extremely corrupt. The rabbis don't really suffer that much persecution, right? So when Jews are massacred and persecuted, guess what, guys? It's usually not the Jewish elite that's massacred and persecuted, right? And also, the rabbis are the ones who are helping the European elite persecute the Jews, right? Because it is the rabbis that control the Jews, and to maintain control of the Jews, they come into these unfair agreements with the European nobility. So for Zabbai Zevi, the real problem is a hierarchy within the religion. The real problem are these laws that don't make any sense. Don't eat pork. So the Sabbath, right? Rest on Saturday. You're not converted to other religions. Doesn't make any sense. What should matter is your faith in God. If we are a people, if we are a family born of Abraham, and we share one blood, then who cares what you dress like, what you look like? We're all one blood. The faith in your heart is what matters. And also, there should be no hierarchy. People should be free to choose their religion. People should be free to choose their own lifestyle. People should be free to choose their own laws. If God loves us, if there's a divine spark in us, then we should know what is right and what is wrong. Okay? So, there are three things that he does that's really important. The first and most important thing is he proposes an egalitarian society where men and women are all equal, where there's no more hierarchy, where the rabbis are not above you because the law doesn't exist anymore, okay? What matters is your relationship to God. So in many ways, he's a proto-liberal and a proto-communist, okay? He believes that the system designed as it is, where you must obey the rabbi, and we must await for the coming of the Messiah, who will take us back to Jerusalem. It's meant to defend the status quo. It's meant to make the Jews slaves to the nobility. Okay? So he's very much a proto-liberal and proto-communist. And we'll discuss his influence on modernity next class. Okay? That's the first thing I want you guys to remember. Second thing I want you guys to remember is that he ultimately converts to Islam. Okay? So when he announced himself as Messiah, a million Jews follow him because he's preaching a message of liberation, of equality, of freedom. And so a million Jews follow him. But then he does something that's really weird, which confuses people, which is he's supposed to, as a Messiah, take them to war against the Ottoman Empire and restore Jerusalem to the Jewish nation. But when he's confronted by the Sultan basically says to him, the turban or your head. The turban means you convert to Islam, or I will cut your head off. Zabbai Zevi converts to Islam. And I was like, why did he do that? And the reason why he did that is you need to understand, he's a Messiah who's come to redeem the Jews, right? You've got millions of Jews who, in the centuries, have converted to Christianity, to Islam. According to the rabbis, these people will burn in hell. But if they're all part of one family, if they all have the divine spark, then they must be redeemed as well before we can have heaven on earth. So Zabbai Zevi, what he does is, by converting, he sacrifices himself, just like Jesus sacrificing himself on the cross to redeem us from the original sin. He is now redeeming the Jews, all Jews, from the original sin of conversion. Okay? And so, by doing this, he's saying, it's okay to convert, guys. In fact, I've absolved you of the original sin with God, so now you can now be close with God. And therefore, you don't have to follow the laws anymore. Okay? The Messianic Age has come, because you are the Messianic Age now. So the last thing he suggests is the idea of justification by sin. Okay? And again, there's been a lot of misinterpretation that this just means that, oh, it's okay to break the laws now. Okay, in fact, Zabbai Zevi, he converts to Islam, he eats pork, and he has a lot of wild sex. Okay? And so he breaks a lot of these laws. But what Zabdi Zevi is really saying is that in the Mesolithic age, the laws don't apply because we all have the wisdom in ourselves to follow our own laws. And by breaking the laws, what you're showing is your true faith in the Messiah, your true faith in God, your true faith in yourself. Okay? Because you're no longer constrained by rabbinic authority. Are we clear? Okay? So, this is the idea of Zabdi Zevi. What happens when he converts is most choose not to follow him. Most choose to go back to the rabbis who are his enemies. But there are 300 families who choose to convert with him. And these families are called the Domai. And guess what happens? The Domai will eventually come to control Turkey. Okay? This is Mustafa Atatürk, who is the founder of the Republic of Turkey. And he's a Domai, guys. Okay? So you can argue that today the Domai control Turkey. All right. So the Jews believe in reincarnation. And 50 years after Zabdi Zevi's death, okay, a new person named Jacob Frank will emerge and consider himself the reincarnation of Zabdi Zevi. Okay, so he's born into a Sabbatean family. He's born into a family that follows the teachings of Zabdi Zevi, even though Zabdi Zevi is considered a heresy, even though he's considered an enemy of the rabbis. He's born into this family, and he will start to extend and systemize the teachings of Zabdi Zevi. And he'll become very successful, okay? He will have a lot of followers, but much more importantly, he will become friends with European nobility, the royal families of Austria and Russia. His followers will become prominent members of the European nobility. They'll become very important intellectuals, and they will become very important bankers. And what I will show you is they've really gone on to conquer the world. And so the question for us is, how did he do that? How did he inspire his followers to go conquer the world? And he did so by presenting a new philosophy, a new religion, okay, that goes against the Jewish religion. It's not Jewish, Judaism. Okay? He doesn't consider himself a Jew. In fact, he hates Jews. So his new religion, called Sabbatean Frankism, goes against the Jewish faith. Okay? And it is a faith based on success. And his argument is this. Jesus came to our world to teach us that the world is a corpse, right? The material world doesn't matter. What matters is the divine spark in you. Because the divine spark will set you free. The divine spark will allow you to return to the monad. That's what matters. Okay? We're here just to learn spirituality. We're here to learn wisdom through pain and suffering. Then Jacob Frank, okay, then look, thinks about this and says, well, you know what? If God is forgiving, if God wants us to come here to learn wisdom, why do we have to suffer? Why can't we become kings ourselves? Why can't we break the rules of this world, cheat, hack the system, and become kings ourselves? Because isn't that a much more better way to enjoy our time here? Okay? And so what he will do is he will teach his philosophy, this religion, to his followers, and he will also train and teach his followers on how to master this world, how to conquer this world. Okay? So we will look at his teachings. All right, so we know what he says because a lot of things he said were written down by his followers in Polish. And we are now going to read a translation by Harris Linowitz from the University of Utah. Okay? These are his words. But what's important to keep in mind is that these are words just for the public, okay? So we don't actually have access to his secret, mystical, magical teachings, the Kabbalah, okay? And think of what his teachings almost like the prince. It's a guide on how to conquer the world. And in fact, the Frankists will go on to conquer the world, okay? So we're going to study his mentality, okay, his teachings. And I'm telling you right now that he's a brilliant teacher. And the reason why is that he's going to teach religion teach ideas through telling stories. He's a storyteller. And the power of stories is that they're like seeds that embed in your mind, and they grow over time. They become like oak trees, these massive trees that shape the way you see reality and the way you see yourself. Okay? So stories are the most powerful mechanisms of education in the world. Okay? So, Alan, can you read the story, please?
Yeah. One Saturday, I went outside the city and there brought myself some oranges and having a penknife on me. Peeled them, a learned Jewish scholar came, along with his purples. Why are you doing this? By God, don't you know that today is a Sabbath and you have a knife on you? You are right, I answered. You speak the truth. But why are you, such a learned man, carrying a knife with you? How can that be? Shit, shouted the Jew. It is my habit to bathe on Friday and put on different clothing for the Sabbath. Well, since I said so, reach into your pocket and you will find a knife there for sure. The Jew was stricken by fear when he, having put his hand into the pocket, brought out his own penknife. He cried out in amazement, "You cannot be a man, for if you are a man, then I am an ass." And he began to beg me to come to him, promising all kinds of good things, but I did not want to do it. And in this way, I did similar things wherever I could.
Okay, so certain things that you'll notice about the story is, first of all, he has contempt for Jews, okay? A learned Jewish scholar. And what he shows is that it's very easy to trick these people. Why? Because they're learning. Their laws have made them stupid, okay? They're very strict about following the laws, and so they become very ignorant. And what he also shows you is how to control people. You control people by using their own laws against them, okay? So this man has a very rigid sense of the world. He just said to Jacob Frank, hey, you can't use a knife. And then Jacob Frank is like, well then, why is there a knife in your pocket? And so it's just a simple magic trick, right? While he isn't looking, Jacob Frank just puts a knife into his pocket. Okay, it's just sleight of hand, very simple trick. But these sleight of hands, because people are stupid and ignorant, you can use them, you can use these tricks to control and manipulate them, okay? So just because he's able to do this, the learned Jewish scholar is now saying, oh, you must be the Messiah. You must be divine. Let me follow you. And Jacob is like, no, you're too stupid to follow me. Goodbye, okay? All right? So it's a simple story. It's very amusing. It's memorable. So if I would tell you this story, I mean, when you're 6 years old, even when you turn 80 years old, you will still remember it. And the story will grow over time. It will shape the way that you see the world. And what you understand is that people are fundamentally stupid and superstitious, and you must take advantage of that, okay? Take advantage of that, because why not? All right. Okay, Amber, can you read, please?
Traveling with Zakubowski from Salonika to Poland, there prevailed at that time a pestilence in Podolia. We came to one township where the plague was filling the people, and we lacked food, wine, bread, cheese, etc. Then remembering that from those contaminated with plague, one does not take money, I told him the opposite. You go there, purchase everything, but don't give them money. He did just that. He came to the baker, bargained for bread, put it in a sack, but when he had to pay, the baker fell down and died. He went to the shopkeeper where he bargained for cheese. He put the cheese away and the shopkeeper died. He went on to the store to buy vodka. The same happened with the owner. In a word, just wherever he went, he bought everything without money, because the plague was sweeping the sellers away. Coming back then to me, where I was waiting for him, a rider on horseback knocked him down with his horse. What are you doing? Shouted Jakubowski. Are you going to ride right over me? He didn't even finish saying it when the rider toppled over and fell to the ground. This is how it is. I did all this because it was promised to me that no plague, nothing at all, could get at me. Therefore, all my orders were carried out successfully by the hand of the one whom I assigned, and so should you be.
Okay, so your stories can be interpreted both literally and metaphorically. Literally is when people are afraid, you take advantage of their fear, okay? When people are afraid to buy things, you go buy things. If people see the plague, you see it as an opportunity to make money for yourself, okay? That's a literal. But then the spiritual is, remember Jesus saying that how the world is a corpse. And if you see it as a corpse, you can stand above people, okay? And what Jacob Frank is saying, if you see the world as a corpse, you can do whatever you want. You can take advantage of people, okay? As long as you believe that I'm above you, okay? You're a dead body. I can take everything from you. You will always triumph. So this is the idea of justification by sin. How do you know you truly believe in God? By breaking the laws of man. By breaking the conventions of man. Because it's these conventions of man, this morality, these laws, that keep you back, okay? What matters is your relationship with God. You have true faith, you can do whatever you want. You can conquer the world, and God will let you because of your faith in God. All right? All right, can you read out?
I asked Rabbi Isahar and Rabbi Mandachis that if the second belonged to the divine, why did he die? Rabbi Isahar replied to me, it stands in our book that he came to this world to experience everything there is. Therefore, he had to come to experience the bitterness of death as well. That's fine, I replied. The answer is good, but if he came to experience everything, why then did he not taste how it would be to be Pasha, Vizier, or Sultan? Why did he not experience rulership? I don't believe it. They cannot give me any answer to this.
Okay, so this is a great point he makes, okay? You have these divine beings like Jesus. They come to experience the world, to learn wisdom. And so why do they suffer? Because suffering is part of wisdom. And then Jacob Frank is like, yeah, but then isn't being a king also an experience? Why didn't he become king? Okay, so what Jacob Frank is telling you is that these laws, this morality, religion in place, it's all a mechanism to control you, to subjugate you, to enslave you. Okay, so his is a religion of liberation from oppression. Okay, keep on reading, Alan.
Yeah. That place to where I go, all have knocked so that the door be open to them. The patriarchs, the Moses, Aaron, David, Solomon, and all the pillars of the world, none have been able to open it. But I will labor and with the strength of my God will open it. No one knew, but only Balaam, who knew a little, but he too not well. That which I mentioned to the company must be understood concerning those pillars of the world, as was mentioned above.
Yeah, so he's saying the Jewish religion, you worship Moses and David and Solomon, but you know what? At the same time, they were all slaves because they could not see the truth of this world. They could not see the true structure of this world. They couldn't really conquer it, but I can. And I will show you the way as long as you follow me, okay? The company is its followers. And the people who follow them are called the brothers and the sisters. So it's a very egalitarian, flat hierarchy where there's no, it's not a triangle like most secret societies. It's just they all obey Jacob Frank, and Jacob Frank will lead them to the promised land. Okay? All right, can you read, Amber?
Should I whiff this? Maybe not. In a dream, I saw Jesus, having priests around him, sitting at a spring of living and clear water. I noticed that this spring went away from them and came to me.
Okay, so this is very simple, right? You think Jesus is the Messiah. Wrong! I'm the true Messiah, okay? Because the water flows to me. Life flows to me. Am I going?
I tell you, as Christ, as you know, said that he came to free the world from the hands of Satan, but I came to free it from all laws and status which have been till now, for all that was the work of the hands of Satan, and by that all fell into his hands. I must destroy all that and only make that which is black look utterly white. At that time, the good God will reveal himself.
Okay, so why is it important to sin, to break the laws? Because the truth of the matter is, this world that we live in, it's controlled by the false God, by Satan. And therefore, we have responsibility to sin, to show the world that his laws can be defied, to defy Satan himself, to show the world that these laws are idiotic. They don't make any sense. They're stupid. Okay? And by doing that, we accelerate the end of this world. That is a messianic age. When this world ends, we will have a new world when we will see the truth for ourselves, when we will awaken to the falseness of this world. And then we have defeated evil. Then we will have defeated sin, okay? This is the idea of accelerationism, right? By sinning, you accelerate the end of the world. By sinning, you reveal the truth of the world. By sinning, you empower yourself. Okay? Okay, any questions so far? But you can see how seductive this is, right? Okay, so this story's a bit long. So I'll simplify it, okay? Again, it is a parable. So there's a merchant, he has the world's most valuable pearl. And he wants to puncture a hole through it because he wants to create a necklace. And he goes to all these specialists, artisans, and they all say, no, this pearl is too valuable. I might break it or I might damage it. You won't be happy, okay? So they all refuse. The merchant really wants a hole, so he offers more and more money. And everyone's like, no, I can't do it. Then this apprentice, okay, and Jacob Frank's like, I'm an apprentice. I don't know anything. He's like, sure, I'll do it. And he does it. And the merchant is like, oh, wow, thank you. And the merchant, the apprentice becomes very wealthy. So in this world, what matters is not obeying conventions. What matters is not listening to other people, conforming to other people. What matters is your fearlessness. Okay? Just go do it, man. Seize it. And you'll become wealthy. That's what this world is about. Okay? We are constrained by these taboos, by all this morality, by all this nonsense. Okay? You must break through it and just seize it for yourself and you'll become powerful. All right. Okay, this is another story, which is too long. But the story goes like this. The king has four sons, and he dies. They're all born of the same age. So he doesn't know, they don't know who inherits the throne, okay? So a great mystic comes and says, okay, here's a king, this is his body, shoot an arrow at his heart, and whoever hits the heart will become king. All three sons try, and they miss. And the fourth son says, I can't do it. Because he is the king, he's my father. He may be dead, but he's still my father. And then the wizard, the mystic says, he is your king. Because he understands what matters is family. Okay? So what Jacob Frank is saying is this. Everyone else, we can treat like animals. They are animals because they're stupid. They're governed by these idiotic laws. But we, the company, the brothers and sisters, the family, we have to love each other. We have to respect each other. Even in death, okay? And our love for each other is what will allow us to conquer the world. All right, Alan, can you read, please?
Yeah. There was once a bear. During its absence, its children were taken from the lair. Out of the great pain of not finding the children, when he came back, the bear fell upon the village and wounded animals and people. The elders of the village sent to it the following order. If you will not leave us, then we'll bring two districts together and destroy you. The bear laughed and sneered at it. They sent the same message again with a memorandum that will gather four or more districts. The bear made fun of it again. Finally, it was sent to the bear with these words, saying, in our village, there are four brothers. We shall send them against you. When the bear heard this, it collected itself and went off on its way. After having withdrawn from the village right away, so it is with you.
Okay, you understand this. So his fathers can say to Jacob Frank, Master, there's only 1,000 of us, but there's 1,000,000 of them. And Jacob Frank is like, look, four brothers are more powerful than 10,000 men. That is the power of love, right? Jesus taught us the power of love. Dante taught us about the power of love. If we can use it, we can conquer the world. Okay, we need to harness the power of the divine spark to come together to conquer the world. It is love that will conquer the world. All right, Amber, can you read, please?
Holy smokes.
Okay, You know what? This is too long, okay? So I'll just tell you the story. The story is very simple. There's an elephant. He's running loose, and he's killing people. So the king says, whoever can kill the elephant will come marry my daughter. So a prince decides to do this. He disguises himself as a normal person, and he says to the king, I will go kill the elephant, but only on the condition that you first let me see your daughter. And the king says, sure, why not? Because you're going to die anyway. And when the prince sees the princess recognizes him right away and says, you must be a prince. Please don't go out there and get yourself killed. Marry me. And the king hears this and says, if you are truly a prince, you don't have to go kill the elephant. And the prince says, no, I already promised you what I will do. Out of my love for your daughter, I will go and kill the elephant. And he does. That's the power of love, okay? That's what Jacob Frank is telling you. That's the power of love. Do things not for money, do things not for power, but because of your love for each other, okay? That's a secret to conquering the world. All right, can you read, Amber?
Once, while the Sultan was visiting a slave gallery with his vizier, he asked each slave about his crime. All said they were innocent of the judgment. Only one, having revealed his crime, did not hide anything from the Sultan. Why should this criminal stay here with all these honest people, shouted the Sultan, away with them off this galley. And so the criminal was released. The vizier asked the Sultan about it. Why do you set him free when he himself admits to his crimes? The king then asked the robber, what do you intend to do now? The robber fell at the Sultan's feet and said, O Lord, if you will take me into your service, then surely I will lack nothing, neither clothing nor robes, and you will see how devoutly I serve you. You will surely be content with me.
Okay, so again, he's teaching his followers how to conquer the world. And one thing that you need to understand is, yes, humans are animals, but they're still good animals and bad animals. And you need to differentiate, okay? Animals want to be loyal. So if you treat a good animal well, that animal will be loyal to you forever. Okay. All right, can you read, Alan?
It is a custom during the Jewish wedding that a distinguished person sit by the groom. I wanted to beat everyone up so that this place would be given to me. But they all spoke up. It is not proper to try to attain that by fighting, but by disputation. If you win over them in a dispute, then it will be proper for you to sit next to the groom. I asked them a few questions, and they give me the answers. This is not a great deal that you give me the answers because the school teachers taught you that. But answer me a single question, and that will be the end. And I ask, it stand with you that the father should circumcise his child, and in other place it stand that the mother should circumcise. To that, they cannot answer. So I sat down beside the groom.
Okay, so the problem with people is that they're stupid, okay? And there are lots of these laws in the Bible. And if you just look at the Bible, you just read the Bible, there's contradictions. But the Jews believe, oh no, the Bible is the word of God. But if it's the word of God, why are there so many contradictions in the Bible? Okay, and all you have to do is reveal these contradictions to the Jews, and they'll just shut up and obey you, right? So what he's telling his followers is, if you want to win the world, you cannot win the world through violence and power because there's too many enemies. If you want to win the world, you do so through argument, through learning, by showing the stupidity of people. And this is very effective, okay? So he's telling his followers, go become lawyers, man. Go become scholars. And at some point in the 19th century in Warsaw, all the top lawyers in Warsaw are Frankists, okay? Because Franks don't teach you how to think for yourself, how to think critically. All right, can you read, Alan?
Elohim said...
Elohim is the gods, okay? Keep on going.
Nor is autumn. Let us make a man. They wanted to make man higher than he is now, but it was from God himself that Adam should sing. And so in all ages they fall until it reached the lowest lowness. And from among the lowest of the low, as we are, our abasement down to the very bottom. It will be so that our rise may go on forever upwards, and assuredly out of deep darkness the light will appear us. As was said above, that is exactly what you have yet from Signor Sento. We shall thank Adam.
Okay, so the Elohim are gods, okay? So what he's saying is that there's a hierarchy of gods. And the true God had an argument with the Elohim, okay? The Elohim is basically saying, let's make men as servants to us. So the man should be imbued with both spirit and a bit of flesh. And God says, no, I want man to be all flesh, to be all pleasure. Okay, why? Because that will allow man to sin. And the more they sin, what they will do is learn wisdom and knowledge. That's a secret to mortals. Because we can sin, we can learn knowledge in a way that the gods cannot. And so the more we sin, the more knowledge we have. That's why it's important to sin. If you do not sin, if you just follow the laws of men, you'll just stay stupid. Okay? But if you really want to understand the world, break the rules. The law says, don't go and steal from the store. Why not? Try it. See what happens to you. The worst is that you'll be fine, right? Or you go to jail for a day or 10 days, whatever, okay? But it's knowledge. It's true knowledge that God cannot give you. That's why God created us, to do things that he cannot do, right? All right, can you read, Amber?
If you would have held on to her by that golden thread, as was indicated before, that with her is the power of leading you before that big brother, who is the King of Kings, or to lead him down to you together with his brothers and his whole household, so that the whole company could see him, as I promised to show you God, so that everyone individually would have the power of asking him for three things. Then we would be united with him, and at the time, we would go out in freedom from everything. That is, from death, subjugation, etc., etc., as we said above.
Okay, so something to understand about the religion is, the Messiah is actually Jacob Frank's daughter, Eva. Okay, so the Messiah is a woman. That's the first thing. Second thing is that there's an eschatology in this religion. At the end of days, when all the world ends, we have eternal life, okay? So, in most religions, it's when we die, we become spirit. But Jacob Frank's like, why would we want that? Why would we want to be like a floating spirit in space? We can't feel any pleasure. True pleasure is to enjoy life. Have as much sex as you want, man. Eat as much food as you want. Get drunk as much as you want. That's true pleasure. And that's what the end of days will be like. So when we have achieved the end of days, the big brother will come, okay? Big brother is like this interdimensional higher god who will come and give us all the wealth. We'll be free from death, okay? So that's what they believe. We'll talk about this next week as well. But keep this in mind, okay? All right. Okay, so this is too long, but let me tell the story. So a prince marries a goddess, and they have two kids, and the goddess kills both kids. And the prince gets angry and leaves her, but then they meet again. And the prince gets angry and says, why did you kill our kids? And the goddess says, here are your kids, and the kids come back. What's happened is that by killing them, they've gone on to other dimensions to learn wisdom, to become strong and beautiful. And so what Jacob Frank is saying is, don't question me, okay? I know things you cannot possibly know. I can access different dimensions. I can access the truth of the world. So when I do things, it's for the greater good. But never ever question me. All right. This is actually an important story, okay? So, Amber, can you read it, please?
When I was little, I was at the place of an old lord, and he had pears of extraordinary flavor and smell in his garden. He gave me some to taste and some for eating. I asked him, "Do you have many trees in your garden like this that give this fruit?" He answered, "I have a lot of big old trees and a few young ones." I said to him, "I will steal fruit from your garden and cut branches so I can plant them myself in my own garden." The Lord said, "If you manage to steal them, then they will be yours. I won't do anything bad to you for it. But if I catch you in the garden, then I will do with you as I please." That garden was surrounded by a strong, high wall. Taking a long pole, I measured the height of the wall, and having gathered some lads in the woods, I had them make a ladder for that height. Having immediately concluded that there must be some kind of trick here, when I got there, I first climbed up the ladder, and I noticed a long cord lying along the wall. I concluded immediately that there was some kind of trap, not threading on the cord at all. I looked for the place where it ended, and I noticed that at the end of the cord, there hung a pistol, attached so that whoever moved the cord, immediately the weapon would fire and the report would give a sign. Immediately, I caught hold of the hammer, unwounded, and having emptied the pan, cut the pistol off the cord and took it for myself. Then thereafter, I ordered my lads to climb the wall, and we stole whatever we wanted. I cut 3 branches off its tree, too, and carried them off to my garden. In the morning, the Lord sees and recognized the theft. Thereafter, he posted a lot of guards to stand watch in the garden at night. What did I do? I went with my boys and we all stood around the wall and fired guns so that we did not allow the guards to sleep. I did this for 3 nights, night after night, the guards being worn out. I didn't go to the 4th night. The guards settled down to sleep. Thereafter, I returned with my peasants and began to steal. That Lord sent for me, but I would go only with one who had been there at the conversation. When I got there with him, the nobleman began to get mad at me. Then that other said, "But you have such an agreement." And so there was peace between us.
Okay, so this is a really important story, okay? So let me explain why. First of all, it's a rewriting of 2 different stories. It's a rewriting of the story of the Garden of Eden, right? When God told Adam and Eve, "Don't eat the fruit." And what the story is telling you is that it's not their fault, it's God's fault, okay? That's number one. Number two is, it's also a rewriting of the story in Augustine's Confessions. So Augustine is one of the main architects of the Catholic Church. And he writes a story of how, when he was young, he and his friends went to steal pears from a tree. And they stole the pears, and then he recognized that, he did this not because he was hungry or because his peers were tasty. It's because he's an evil person. Okay? And what J. Frank is saying is, that's a stupid story. What God wants us to do is to break the rules of man so we can be more wealthy. Okay? And this is a story that's also metaphorical. He's telling his followers that God will not punish us if we break the laws. Okay? Because God cares about our creativity. God cares about our willingness to try new things, to explore, to test the boundaries. That's what God wants. So as long as we do so and we don't break fundamental laws like killing other people or hurting other people that angers God, we'll be fine always. And I will show you how to do so. I will show you how to get power and not break the laws of man. Don't worry about morality. Don't worry about convention taboos. These are all idiotic things that doesn't matter. We just made them up. Okay? What matters is that we gain more and more power. And I will show you how to do so through trickery and through deception. Yes?
Do we have a specific time that we can really do such things so freely and we are not restrained by laws and such stuff?
Okay. Look. Jacob Frank, first of all, he's a Kabbalist, okay? So he's a mystic. And if you go into the mystical Jewish tradition, they teach you that the universe is consciousness, it's vibrations. So in other words, reality is just a hallucination. It's what we imagine it to be. And so these laws, these taboos, these transgressions, they're all things we made up. They have absolutely no relevance to reality, okay? And so the reality is that if everyone thinks these laws exist, but you know they don't exist, that makes you king, okay? So that if you can see this for yourself, become a king, become a prince. In fact, you'd be stupid and weak and ignorant if you did not do so. If you know for a fact that these laws are stupid, then break them. Take advantage of this. Okay? If there's a gold bar sitting in front of you and you refuse to take it, it doesn't mean you're virtuous. It just means you're stupid. Right? Okay, can you read? Please, Alan. Yeah.
There is no people like the Jews. They are like snakes and crocodiles, for there is no love at all among them, but only jealousy, hatred, and contention one against another. But it is by far the worst in Poland. Therefore, it stands, the evil will open from the north. Everything else will be revealed from there as well.
Okay, can you read this as well?
Yeah. There is one thing that neither 1,000 nor 2,000 nor 3,000 men could lift that thing up, and you would be able to lift it very easily with one hand.
Okay, so what is this thing where 1,000, 10,000 men can't lift up? It's convention, it's social convention, right? It's laws that we agree on, it's morality. But you see the truth for yourself because I taught you the truth, and therefore, it's easy for you to lift it up, okay? So it's the laws of man that we have problems defying. But once you see the truth for yourself, once you've trained your mind to see that everything around us is false, then you become God, you become king, okay? Also, what this line tells us, he's complaining about the Jews, right? Frank hates the Jews because he thinks that the Jews have done this upon themselves, right? Why is it that the Jews get persecuted everywhere? Why is it that Jews get massacred everywhere? It's because of their silly little mind, where they think that the law says we can never convert. Who says so? Because of these rabbis? These rabbis are human as well. Think for yourself. Okay? See the truth for yourself. And that's what he's teaching his followers. Alright, okay, this is actually a really important story. So can you read it, Amber?
There was a certain rich Jew who loved all men powerfully and received guests graciously, not begrudging them food
okay,
or drink.
So this guy is rich, the richest Jew in the world, and he's generous. And so we should all worship him, right? We should all be grateful to him. We should all honor him, right? But let's see what happens. Keep on going.
Those he treated said to him that they greatly loved him mutually. What does he do? He takes a fat roast goose and having dressed it in a shirt and having put it in a little coffer, went in the morning to his friends who had eaten with him and asked them for advice, saying, "The peasants have planted a dead child on me and want me to make an attack. What shall I do?" All of them answered him, "We don't want to know about it, neither about you nor that child." He went away from them as if he were very worried at all.
Okay, so he's very rich, he's very generous to people, and then he's asking himself, are they with my friends? Or are they being nice to me just because I'm nice to them? Because I'm wealthy. So he designs a test, okay? And he's asking for help. And when he asked for help, he realized that these friends are going to help him, even though he was very generous to them. Okay, keep on going.
He went to his neighbor who was also wealthy, but they had never had close relations. He asked him what his advice might be. He replied to him, "Dear neighbor, let's go and dig a hole at the edge of your estate and bury the chest there and put some boards and other stuff on top of it." But those who had eaten with him themselves went and spied out the place where they buried the chest, and they themselves went to the squire of that town, reporting to him that terrible deed. That lord, together with his whole household, took himself off and went to the house of that Jew. Having arrived there, he ordered the householder immediately thrown in irons and ordered the place dug up to find the child. But to the great surprise of everyone, when the chest was opened, the roast goose was seen in the shirt. The lord asked what that might be. Thereafter, that Jew replied that it was to test those who really loved him that he did it, and that I wanted to see if they were really as kindly disposed to me as they had said, but I have concluded the reverse.
So if you're very wealthy and you're nice to people, they'll think you're stupid and naive, and they'll plot against you. Okay? That's the reality that you live in. If you want to become rich, you have to break the laws of man. If you want to stay rich, you have to be mean to people. You have to recognize that people are inherently evil. Okay? They're animals. Okay, Alan, can you read, please?
Yeah. It is written that silver answers everything. It is not even possible to draw near God without money.
Okay, so how do you know you're successful? How do you know you're happy? Money, right? This story down below, he tells a story of how he has these followers and he's well respected. So now these normal men are trying to bribe him and says, hey, why don't we join forces? I'll give you $1 million. And he says, no. I'll give you $1 billion. No. I'll give you $1 trillion. No, no, no. Okay? Because what matters is belief in our mission. Okay? Our mission is to create a new world. Our mission is to usher in the Messianic age. That's what matters. Okay? Not the money. All right. So, can you read, Alan?
Yeah.
Two maidens
from Poland, daughters, were leaving and wanted to lie down on the bed. I wanted to have intercourse with them. At that one, nun came, undressed and also lay on the bed. I lay on the bed. The nun says to me, Lord Frenick, what are you doing? Indeed, I am married. I replied, what of it? Exposition? That thing with the nuns was prepared for you, and you do that with them in squares, towns, and streets, and that would have been in an eternal praise for you. Also, that the priest would become you servant, but you did not want it.
Okay, so this is a really important idea. The idea is that the reality is constructed through a hallucination, okay? Through our own imagination. And so everyone is living in someone else's imagination. These laws were created by someone else. But what this means is that what you can do is create your own reality, and then when you create your own reality, then people will obey your laws, okay? So think of the story. This is a nun, and she's sworn to uphold the church rules, right? But all Frank did was undress, lie in bed, and just lay there and imagine her coming. And she does. She comes, she undresses, and she's lying beside him. And now she's like, I'm afraid that if I do this, if I have sex with this man, I will be punished by God. And then he's like, don't worry about it. Okay? So the world is what you make of it. The world is what you imagine of it. If you train your mind to see the world in a certain way, then everyone else will see the world your way. Okay? That's what controls the world, the imagination. Does that make sense, guys? Okay. But you can see why he's so powerful, right? Yeah, yes?
But like if I create my own world inside my head, but I did not tell others or I did not influence others by my actions, how could I like let others to follow my world?
Okay, so this is something that a normal person cannot do, okay? This is someone who has an imagination can do, right? So think of a writer. The writer is imagining the world and writing it down. Okay? And when you read the book, what happens? You come into this world. Think of a television show, right? A television show is just a reality that someone made up. When you watch a television show, you think it's real. You come into this world. Okay? And this is what you can do as well. If you train your mind in a certain way, but you have to train your mind a certain way. Okay? And how do you train your mind? Through constant education, through reading, through dialogue, through debate. And that's why the fragments are so powerful. Okay? Because they're not like a bunch of robbers. They're people who are deeply engaged in learning and exercising their imagination. Right? Does that make sense? All right, so this is really important. So what's going to happen is that most of Frank's followers are Jews. And what they're going to do is they're going to convert together to the Catholic religion. Because when they do so, they will be given more opportunities to grow in power. Okay, they'll be patronized by Catholic royalty. Okay, so they decide to convert together. But before they do, they have a ceremony to mark their conversion. Okay, can you read Amber? On the night?
On the night of that day, the following deed took place. The Lord set up a guard in the courtyard made up of our people so that no one might dare even to look through the window, and he himself went in with the brothers and sisters, undressed nude, and also Her Highness OBM, and ordered all those gathered to do so. And after having taken a little bench, he drove a nail into the center and set two burning candles on the bench and hung his cross from the nail. And so after having knelt before it himself, he took the cross and bowed to the four sides and kissed it. Then Her Highness, and then everyone, he ordered to do so. After that, the sexual relations took place thereafter according to his determination. At that, one of the women laughed. Then at the moment, the Lord ordered the candles put out, saying, if they would let the candles burn, they would see what would happen. And at the time, he said, with this deed, we go to the naked things. Therefore, it is necessary to go naked.
Okay, this deed is conversion, okay? So what they're doing is this. They're converting to a new religion, and they're supposed to swear loyalty to a new faith, a new God. But what they're doing in the ceremony is swearing loyalty to each other, okay, through a ritual. And this ritual, it's not sex. It's a ritual of love, where Jacob Frank is instructing each other on how to behave in a sexual manner, okay? And this is a way to cement a covenant with each other. And what this does is it empowers everyone to go far and wide. But no matter how far and wide you go, remember that we still love each other. And because of our love for each other, we'll find each other, okay? So he tells a lot of stories of how these prince goes around the world in disguise. Because you have no choice. Because this world is run by idiots. This world is governed by idiotic laws. And therefore, you must disguise yourself. You must hide yourself. But remember that we will always find each other because we know each other for who we are. Okay? Because we're bounded by this covenant with each other. So the thing about the Frankists that's very annoying, or which makes people hate them, is they're always engaging in this sort of sexual rituals. They have incest with their children. They have incest with their daughters. They do a lot of wife swapping. Okay? And you may think to yourself, this is degrading. But if you think about it, wife swapping, who has the power in the relationship? It's actually the wife, right? Because before, the wife had to stay at home and she had to and she couldn't use her body. But now with wife swapping, she can now meet other powerful men and control them, manipulate them. Okay? So the Frankists are an extremely egalitarian people where there's also woman empowerment. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. Can you read, Amber?
August 28th, 1762. Her Highness OBM traveled from this place to the Lord.
Okay, so they're in Poland. Her Highness is a daughter, right? Eva. Okay, the Messiah. Keep on going.
She arrived there the 8th of September, stayed, and on the day of judgment had sexual relations with the Lord for the first time. The 18th of October, the Lord said to her, now you have become pregnant by me with a son. When she came to the Lord for the first time, the Lord began with her that ceremony that King Ahasuerus did with Esther, at which she was mightily frightened.
Okay, so this is incest, and the goal of this incest is for Jacob Frank to create another body to reincarnate, okay? So they believe in reincarnation. So even though Jacob Frank, he's really the last iteration of somebody, Zevi, he's the last one we know about, okay? There must be someone else as well, okay? So what Jacob Frank and somebody, Zevi, represent is a more powerful understanding of faith, okay? So remember, There have been three different understandings of faith. The Catholics believe in the idea of justification by works. If you just do what the church tells you to do, if you avoid sin, you go to heaven. Martin Luther says, that's stupid. The church doesn't have authority to decide who goes to heaven. So he used the idea of justification by faith. It's only if you truly believe in God that you can go to heaven. But the question is, how do you really believe? So you believe in God. And what Sabbath is heavy, and Jacob Frank says, like, by sinning, by going against the laws of man, by being shunned by your community, by being hated by your community, that is true faith in God. And when you do this, when you sin, not only do you learn knowledge, but your faith grows more powerful. And those who understand this, we are a forever community. We are the true prince of the world. We're the true leaders of the world, and together we will rule the world together. And guess what, guys? They succeeded. All right, why? Well, because, look, at the end of the day, the Frankists, they are a secret organization. And they figured out how to create the most resilient, the strongest organization in the world, okay? So these are the characteristics of a really strong organization. They have a strict hierarchy. So everyone's loyal to Frank, okay? Unity of purpose, they're all loyal to Frank. Selflessness, they all love each other. Relentless pursuit of material victory. They love money, secrecy, discipline, energy, and motivation. Okay? Self-hatred, fear, anger, jealousy. Okay? And self-hatred, fear, anger, and jealousy is created by sinning, right? Because when you have sex with your own daughter, when you do this sort of stuff, you feel tremendous guilt. But this guilt can be channeled to make you more energetic, to make you more focused on success, to make you want to achieve the end of days. Okay? Does that make sense? All right, so again, guys, Frankism is not Judaism. These are two different things. In fact, Frankism is a rejection of Judaism, okay? Because in Judaism, they teach you about the spirit. Well, for Frank, the spirit doesn't matter. What matters is the material. Because the spirit doesn't allow you to access wisdom. It's the material that allows you to access wisdom. Sinning allows you to access wisdom. Jews tell you to obey Yahweh. And Frank says, no, what matters is we defeat Satan here on earth, okay? That's the true mission, defeat Satan. Jude says, trust God, all right? So the idea is, don't worry about the Messiah coming. Eventually he'll come and he'll lead us back to Jerusalem and he'll bring us all back and he'll build a third temple. And Frank says, no, let's not wait. God doesn't want us to wait. God wants us to seize the day. God wants us to make our own world. That's why God created us, because we have the capacity to create our own world, our own paradise. So let's do it. Let's not wait, okay? So he's an accelerationist, okay? And you do that by sinning a lot, by showing the fakeness of this world, that this world is ultimately an illusion, okay? So does this philosophy make sense to you guys?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, one thing that you guys need to know is that it is rumored that Frank, he's actually the true founder of the Illuminati, which is an alliance of secret societies that control the world today, okay? So the Frankists, what they will do is, when they convert to Catholicism, they will have access to both the Jewish faith, as well as the Islamic faith, as well as the Jesuit faith, the Catholic faith, okay? And they will combine all three together, because they have spies everywhere that allow these different secret societies to coordinate, okay? So, there's going to be a rumor that Frank founded the Illuminati, but I suspect he did. Why? Because one of the most famous members of the Illuminati is Goethe, okay? And Goethe wrote a very famous play called Faust. And let's think about the plot of Faust. The plot is this. You have Faust, who's a scholar, and he's looking for wisdom. So he makes a deal with Mephistopheles, the devil, and Mephistopheles says, I will give you eternal wisdom in return for your eternal life, your soul. And Faust says, sure, okay? And Faust does a lot of things. He sins, he has sex with a young child, she dies. He does a lot of really bad things, but he learns a lot of wisdom. And when he dies, he's supposed to go to heaven. I'm sorry, when he dies, he's supposed to go to hell, okay? But at the very last minute, when Mephistopheles has come to claim his soul, God sends angels to rescue Faust and take him away. Okay? That's a very Frankist attitude towards life. Sin as much as you want in order to gain wisdom. If you do so, if you gain a lot of wisdom, then God will reward you with eternal life. Okay? All right. Again, the Frankists infiltrate the Jesuits. And so a lot of people believe that the Frankists now control the Catholic Church or have a lot of say over the Catholic Church, okay? Okay, they also infiltrate the Freemasons. I'll show you this next class, okay? They're also a major influence on development of Mormonism, okay? If you look at the structure of the Mormon church and you look at Freemasonism, it's very similar. Scientology, guys, okay? If you just look at Scientology, it's very similar to what the Freemasons believe as well. All right, some very famous Freemasons in history. Look, there's lots of them, okay? But it's all secret because they work in silence. The big thing is their secrecy among their secrecy. Okay, they go in silence. But we know for a fact that Louis Brandeis, who is the first Jewish Supreme Court justice in America, he was a Freemason. And there's a very famous university, Brandeis University, founded after him. Okay, so if you think that, so if you know that this guy is a Freemason, think about how many other very powerful Americans are also Freemasons. Okay, I'm not allowed to name their names because, well, they would deny it, and I would get in a lot of trouble if I mentioned their names. But they are very powerful people, and you know who they are, okay? You will know their names, but you may not know their Freemasons. This is William Butler Yeats, who is a very famous Irish poet. He himself also is a member of a secret society, okay? And we're going to read a poem together by Yeats to show you the influence of Freemason philosophy on modernity. In fact, what I will show you next class is you can make the argument that Jacob Frank and Sabra Zevi together, they created modernity in the West. All right, so we're going to read a poem by this very famous Irish poet, who is also a Nobel Prize winner, also a member of a secret society called the Order of the Golden Dawn. Okay. All right, so it's called Crazy Jane Talks with the Bishop. Okay, so Emma, can you read, please? It's very simple.
I met the bishop on the road, and much said he and I.
Okay, so this is a woman, and she's talking to a bishop, right? A high religious authority. Keep on going.
Those breasts are flat and fallen now. Those veins must soon be dry. Live in a heavenly mansion, not in some foul sty.
Okay, so you're fallen, right? So you've seen a lot in life. You've lived a terrible life, but don't worry. God is forgiving. If you convert, if you change your life now, God will forgive you. All right? And all will be good. Keep on going, Amber.
Fair and foul are near of kin, and fair needs foul, I cried. My friends are gone, but that's a truth, nor grave nor bed denied. Learned in bodily lowliness and in the heart's pride.
You cannot have... you cannot have good without evil. You cannot have ugliness. You cannot have beauty without ugliness. Okay? So, and this is something that I've learned because I've sinned, because I've gone low. Okay? Keep on going.
A woman can be proud and stiff, one on love intent, but love has pitched his mansion in the place of excrement, for nothing can be soul or whole that has not been rent.
Where is God? Where is love? God is in garbage, okay? So you have to sink low to truly find God. You have to sink low to truly find yourself. You have to destroy yourself in order to truly create yourself. Okay? And that is a very Freemason attitude. So in many ways, Freemason belief has conquered modern Western culture. And I will show you why next class, okay? Any questions?
Like, I think Frank said that you can have all pleasures that you want of sins, but I think that is a kind of low vibrations. So we need to have that low vibration and sins to learn our mistakes so we can find the success, right?
Okay, look, sin is taboo, okay? It's these barriers, it's these walls in front of you. But if you really want knowledge, you have to break through these walls so that reality can reveal itself more clearly to you. Okay, do you understand? Sin are all these invisible walls that you put in front of you for no particular reason. It's all part of your imagination, okay? So if you want to see the world as it truly is, if you really want to see yourself for who you truly are, then you must sin. Because sin will also cause a process of guilt and reflection and wisdom, okay? it will cause another process of pain and suffering. And we avoid sinning because we're afraid of social condemnation. We're afraid of being laughed at. We're afraid of being mocked by other people. But if you really want true knowledge, you have to go against social conformity. Okay? Does that make sense? So sin, don't sin just for the sake of sinning. Sin because it allows you to access greater knowledge, a deeper knowledge. Okay, does that make sense, guys? Mm-hmm. All right. Any more questions? Yeah?
Do you think that the Francis ideology has an impact on the Palestine-Israel conflict? Because I think I see a lot of similar narratives coming.
Yeah, so at the very end of the course, I will teach you, like, the Sabbatean Francis, they're the founders of Israel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so what's happening in Palestine and Israel today, it's driven by the Francis philosophy, yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, great. So I'll see you guys next week.